I'm driving in my car. I turn on the radio.
How about you let me drive?
Oh, no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I wanna drive.
It's the question that drives us.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
All right, how many of you are tempted to just, like, I don't know, crawl into bed and then come back wake up in about 3 or 4 months?
Are you asking me? Hibernate?
you
want me to hibernate?
Hibernate and then come back
and then deal with the markets
of like 3 or 4 months from now.
Fine. Sign me up.
Why does that not possible? Surprise me?
You know how I roll.
All right, well, let's see how our next guest rolls. Doug Sioka is back with us, CEO and partner at Kavar Capital on Zoom in Leawood, Kansas. Doug, so good to have you back with us. There's a lot going on geopolitically, as you know, and you know we've been covering, but a lot coming at investors just generally speaking. Having said that, what do you think if we all went to bed and then came back in 3 or 4 months, did the hibernation thing? Well, actually, that would be like more like 5 or 6 months. What kind of environment might we have in 4 months or 6 months from now?
Yeah, that's a great question, and thank you for having me back on. You know, I think we would have an environment that we'd missed a lot of fantastic opportunities. You know, I think, like you kind of mentioned, there's been a lot of negativity. Obviously, the emotional weight of what transpired in Israel over the weekend is heavily on everyone's hearts and minds. And you know, the markets historically don't really know how to calibrate prospects of geopolitical escalation, right? There are knee-jerk reactions into havens and out of risk. But then there's the realization that conflict galvanizes government interventions, and that could be a net increase in capital and liquidity. And so it's kind of an emotional tension between, I should say, it's sort of a tension point between emotion and economic. And that kind of defines what the market's been, but for various reasons throughout the year, no question.
I like that combination between emotion and economic. That makes a lot of sense.
Well, so where are we right now? Because it seems like it's less emotional, at least today, in terms of what's driving the market, because it seems like it's a sort of a, well, maybe it is emotional, but maybe it's just dovish.
Yeah, I think, Tim, you could say, well, today's the Raphael Bostic or Philip Jefferson rally.
Yeah.
Maybe we give a little attribution to Mary Daly because her acknowledgement of race sufficiency was a bit more of a reversal than the
others.
And
because our Lisa Abramowitz did the most amazing conversation with her at the New York Economic Club. I have to just put a shout out for Lisa because it was pretty amazing. But anyway, go ahead.
Well deserved. Well
agree.
Deserved.
Agree.
Yeah. And then throw on top of that, I mean, lastly, elevated Chinese stimulus. And then I saw something interesting this morning from Bespoke, and talking about the dollar has been in a bit of a decline over the last couple of weeks, and even in spite of the haven demand that emanated over the weekend. So today's a pretty good day, particularly when you consider that the equal weighted S&P is outperforming the market cap weighted by about 30 basis points for those that are concerned about an absence of breath. And no doubt, this 4,200 level in the S&P has held pretty solidly since last week.
Yeah, just Benton was talking about a weaker dollar too, impacting the trade.
So Doug, do you think, it's hard to, I don't even look back on the declines we saw last week and then see the surge we saw this week. I'm wondering if we're going to test those lows again, not just the lows from last week, but last October, this cycle.
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, it's interesting, Tim, like pessimists have been spewing this pretty well-worn narrative, right? Like, expect these persistently high interest rates to, number one, decelerate the economy, number two, undermine consumer confidence, number three, re-rate market multiples, and then lastly, shift capital to more conservative corners. And all of that makes sense, right? And I also have said for a while, I don't know that the market is getting credit for time served last year, right? Yes, we've had a nice bounce. We're still off, but we're still not taking out the prior period highs, right? Even though we've had the bounce on the one-year anniversary of a couple of days ago of those lows. But historically, right, when you just look at where we are at current real yields, it's actually a coin toss between stock and bond performance looking out 12 months. Hmm. Both are positive. Again, this is historically, not predictive, just perspective. But inflation has come down a bunch off the peak. And this is what we know. And I read this from Goldman Sachs last week. Since 1945, the S&P has risen 21% on average in the 2 years after the recent data showing a peak in CPI. If you take out episodes with a recession, that means you're looking at more like a 28% gain over that two-year period. So I do think because the wall of worry is so steep, a lot of that is reflected in valuations. And there's some pretty attractive places to put money right now. And there's some pretty important inflection points that are building.
So when you say market getting credit for time served, you're talking equity market specifically?
And fixed income, right, Carol? Because you figure last year was, what, the seventh worst year in the history of stocks, the first worst year in the history of bonds. It was the single worst year for bonds, the single worst 3-year period in bonds, 7, 5, and 10-year period in bonds. I don't know why I said those in out of chronological order.
Right.
But so there was a lot of time served, a lot of unwind, a lot of slack and excess left both markets, which needed to happen, right? There was just so much liquidity that has now come out of the market, and it's still coming out of the market. And it's one of the reasons why we're seeing the back end of the curve rising as it has.
So in other words, both stocks and bonds have gotten the heck beaten out of them. And so let's remember that in terms of when we look at the trade today.
Absolutely. That's a much better, more concise way to say it than
I
did.
Well, I could have used another four-letter word, but, you know, we are Bloomberg, and I like to keep it clean. Anyway, but it's – no, that's a really good point. So having said that, it's an interesting week, Doug, with bank earnings, and we're looking for a lot of guidance and understanding of kind of where we go from here from the big bank CEOs, who can tell us a lot, right, about the lending environment.
Yeah, you know.
And especially when you've got the Fed concerned about tightening financial conditions. That's why I think what we get from the banks is even more important. But you've also got some Fed minutes and those inflation prints. Is this potentially a very important week for you and maybe how you think about the markets and where it goes from here or what?
You know, I think every piece is incremental, right? What we've had this obsession with, and likely because it's been, you know, big center point of the media, but then also fielding questions from our clients is there a chance for a soft landing? And to your point, Carol, we're going to get some aspects of that case that can be affirmative or counter. And we think there's a chance for a soft landing. But if you really think about, we have stable to accelerating economic growth. Do you realize that the GDP now at the Atlanta Fed rate is projecting a third quarter GDP of 4.9%?
Do you believe it?
So we have stable to accelerating GDP. Say that again, Tim, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, I mean, they have a pretty good track record.
They do have a pretty good track record, right? And you have stable to falling CPI and PCE. And we saw on Friday, last Friday, this ridiculously strong headline at a P number, but also a significant drop, and significant in its drop, of average hourly earnings. So you've got an economy that's resilient, a consumer that's still spending, even though they've lost some leverage in salary negotiations, which we saw in the quits rate as well, which is actually okay, is some of the stuff that they're buying is dropping in price. Right,
okay.
As for that CPI plummet.
So stable or accelerating growth, a consumer who's still spending. What else is on the team soft
awesome,
landing?
Yeah,
what else
like.
Is on team soft landing?
Well, and you got to consider the consumer so importantly because it's 68% of GDP is wrapped up in consumers' contribution. So you still have this strong employment pick that I mentioned. You have low leverage as a percentage of household net worth. And then this is really fascinating. Article in Wall Street Journal over the weekend talked about the shifting in the burden of purchasing from the younger to the older cohort in this country. And I didn't realize that people age 65 and up spend 22% of all the dollars in this country annually. That's up from 15% in 2010. And Americans age 70 and higher control 26% of the household wealth.
Huh.
So you have this cohort of people that is also going through this emotional catharsis of, you know what, we went through the pandemic. You know what, life can be short. You know what, I'm going to spend.
Right.
We've seen 5 to 7% elevation in that spending.
I got family members who are doing that and traveling and doing all that kind of things. Doug Sciocca, thank you so much of Kavar Capital. This is Bloomberg.